It's his little Viagra boost.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Ah, yes, indeed. You got me again, you lucky little devils. And you don't know who me is? Me either. You know, for me right now, a really good day is when I walk into a room and I remember why I'm there. That's just like, you know, that's a really good day. Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the Command Control Center module. And we're trying to encapsulate him, keep him under control.
Bubble in a box.
Yeah, yeah. I just opened a beer, boys.
Yeah, that was.
Nice.
You can see why you're on this show. All right. Boy, it got windy out there today.
Yes, it did.
We were driving up, you know, we come up from Port Charlotte, and for the last 3 days, we've been building a deck out behind the store, just putting in a cosmetic deck, and because we have this beautiful mural up on the wall with all the different fish and a bunch of different sponsors all hidden in there, and just, it's a really cool mural. And if you get a chance, stop by the back of the store and see it. Our back door's on Edgewater, for everybody who's been coming for the last 20 years and thinks we only have a front door. Front door's on 41, back door's on Edgewater. We have a big parking lot out back. But we have an antique Sea King, an antique Johnson, antique Avonrood, antique Mercury, and an antique Eglin little outboards up on display out behind the store now.
Nice. I've never heard of a Sea King.
Yeah, I don't know if it
That's
was...
something you saw up north. There were a lot of small Sea Kings up north. Yeah. And I remember the little Johnsons. That was probably my favorite outboard motor.
You're going to like that little one we got hung up on the post out back. It's really cool. It's probably, I would guess 50s, but it could be older.
Mm-hmm.
But at the earliest, it's probably early 60s. But I'm going to guess sometime in the 50s. Got him from Jerry over at SOS when he was closing up, because Jerry was the king of, Jerry was one of the best mechanics ever lived as far as outboard engines and inboards and outboards. But Jerry loved antique motors, so I got a 5 different ones from them up there. So it's pretty cool. Stop by, check that out. Hopefully you'll like it and look around at the mural. A lot of people taking pictures of them with all that weird stuff on the mural. The only thing I forgot on the mural was a mermaid.
There's no mermaid?
I'm adding a mermaid. I'm going to pay him to come back and do a mermaid. I said, you know, you got to have a mermaid.
Yeah.
I kept thinking, I'm forgetting it.
Clamshells or no clamshells?
Got to have clamshells. It's a 2000. If this was still the 80s or 90s,
that's right,
you could do whatever and people would just kind of giggle.
Right.
But, oh my gosh, nowadays a nipple will destroy the world and ruin the youth of America. And, you know, it's gotten out of hand.
It ruined my youth.
I don't know if it ruined mine, but it definitely made it more energetic.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Speaking of mermaids and energetics... bait. Everybody's talking about catching live bait right now. In other words, white bait of some sort, small bait fish, which includes greenbacks, hard scale sardines, same thing, soft scale herring, which is the threadfin herring, and then you've got Spanish sardines, bunkers. What else is there, Robert? Moharas?
Mahara, well, they're not really a schooling fish, so you'd probably be looking at some menhaden once in a while. But I think you nailed the three most popular ones that are schooling up out there.
Threadfins and greenbacks are what most people classify as the white bait, but anything small and shiny they call white bait.
Yeah, white bait has, 4 or 5 different names. You got white bait, greenbacks, greenies, sardines, and scaled sardines.
Okay, and they're hard scale sardines.
Right.
So, the thing is, at this time of year, bait fish are very, very, very oily compared to like a shrimp and other types of thing. But the water's at a great temperature for them to digest this, and actually, especially snook, there's some kind of belief that they want the bait fish to help in their spawning process.
The oils in it?
The oils in it, yeah. So this is the time of year where that bait fish, a month or so ago, you'd catch 6 fish for 1 on a shrimp that you would on a white bait. And right now, you're probably going to catch 6 on a white bait for 1 that you catch on a shrimp.
Right.
There is no perfect bait. White bait is not better than shrimp. Shrimp is not better than white bait. Crabs are not better than either of those two. Everything just has what's best for that time. What's best for that type of water. Water temperature comes into play. Once the water's over 85 degrees, dead bait, cut bait, just pieces of crab, pieces of ladyfish, dead shrimp, they all work better than live bait.
Right.
And once the water gets down, the closer it gets to 60, the better shrimp work. But right now, the water's in those perfect temperatures, absolutely amazing, gorgeous time to be fishing. And white bait is what you want to do. Now, for years, I'm talking the last 33, 4, 5 years, whatever I've been in that store, you went out looking for white bait, and you literally look for it.
Yes.
You would see it dimple on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen schools of bait, RJ, where they're out there dimpling along on the surface, and it kind of looks like rain on the water.
Right, that's a perfect way to describe it.
Well, when you go out now, you're not really seeing that as much. There's clouds, millions of pieces of bait in the harbor, but you're not seeing them dimpling on the surface. You don't get that rain look. Now, I have a thing that those of us, myself and everybody else, have cast netted so much bait. I mean, literally, if you took all the people that were cast netting bait, we're probably talking at least 2 million pieces of bait taken a year by the recreational anglers, plus millions and millions more by the commercial people.
Yeah.
So every time it dimples up the top, somebody's throwing a net on it, somebody's cast netting it, sabikiing it, they're getting hit. And we've taken so many of those. I wonder if we didn't jump them a bit forward in the evolutionary process, that the ones that weren't getting taken are the ones that stayed deep in the water. So when we take out the ones that are genetically more inclined to go to the surface and run along, and leave behind the ones that genetically are more inclined to go deep and stay deep, which ones are left? So, you know, whenever they're spawning, there's going to be a certain percentage either way. But I think the percentage of bait that goes deep, swims deep, and doesn't want to come up to the surface is much higher right now.
Yeah.
You guys have another explanation for why you go down around the harbor and you mark them on a depth finder, or you look down in the water and you see them flash down in the water, but you're not seeing them at the surface?
The only other explanation would be less predators. You know, because usually the predators push them up towards the surface, too. You know, Spanish mackerel, sharks, tarpon, stuff like that would push bait balls up towards the surface in a lot of instances. But we do have Spanish mackerel around, and we do have sharks around. So I would think that you would be seeing the bait a little bit more often. But in the last couple of years, yeah, it's definitely
hiding more.
Mm.
Any theories, conjectures, speculation?
I heard an odd one a couple of weeks ago. They were talking about we don't see many flounder around anymore. I don't know if that's a truism or not, but it was
no,
a person's
not.
Opinion. There it's, are a lot of flounder.
And it nothing to do with recently. You got to go back to June 1995. We had 18 inches of rain in like 2 hours. The resulting flood and the continuing rain after that destroyed most of the habitat for the sawfish and the flounder, the skates, the guitar fish, all that. So there was almost none here for several years. Now, in the last, 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah.
We've seen a steady increase in flounder. And we'll have 1 year that's a little better than the others, but at least we have some steady flounder. But it has nothing to do with fishing, overfishing, underfishing. All that's to do with the habitat.
And a little bit of the fact that we're at the bottom range of where they really are comfortable. You know, we're on the southern end of most of those
right.
fishes' range, so when you get towards those outskirts, you're just going to have a smaller population of them naturally because they don't like the temperature, they don't like the whatever it is, but just like all other species, they've got a certain area that they like to inhabit, and we're at that bottom end of it.
Yeah. Anyway, this guy was saying that there's no flounder around. I said, well, how do you know there's no flounder around? I mean, you're just not catching them. He said, because the bait are staying deep now. And his opinion was the flounder push, because they feed on them, they push the bait fish further up. So it's kind of like you were saying about predators pushing them down into deeper water.
No, Robert was saying predators push them up.
Push them up, okay, yeah, because the predators are...
Same thing as your buddy's saying.
Yeah, but he was reversing that, saying there's no flounder around because I'm not seeing any bait working the surface.
We have not had huge flounder populations enough to push bait to the surface, like I say, since 95.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
While he's correct, but we just have not had the numbers of flounder that would affect the schools of bait. You know, we just don't have those numbers. Getting better. We've seen a steady increase, little bits up and down since the last 5 years now, but actually getting better. But really rainy summers tend to destroy more habitat. Boats are not destroying the grass flats, all this stuff. It's simply a matter of dirty water. In other areas, some of these boat theories, oh, the boats are ruining the flats and this and that and the next thing, may or may not be true. But for as far as Charlotte Harbor, it's such a unique entity that we don't have the big water flow on the grass flats. So if you have boats running back there at idle speed or whatever running, it tends to get more of the silt, the muck, the algae, where the tide can actually take it out. But it's got to float up and then be taken out by the tide. The tide is just not strong enough to clean it while it's not there. But either way, catching bait, you've got to actually look in the water or chum for it. Now, what I do is when I'm looking for bait, you can go around any of the markers in the harbor, right along the Gulf Coast on the beach. But when I say on the beach, I literally mean they're in 3 inches, 6 inches of water, going out maybe to 2 foot.
Yeah.
When people think out along the beach, they actually think we're talking about 30 feet offshore, 50 feet offshore. I'm talking about 2 feet off the beach. Literally, if I'm going out cast netting bait on the along the Gulf, I'm a lot of times my part of my cast net is landing in dry sand. It's not that far. It's really that close. But up in the harbor, you've got channel markers. Now, if it's a one-post marker, a lot of times it still holds bait. You want to throw on the down current side that will be laying up in the eddies of the marker. But then you've got those four-post marker, marker two, marker one. Marker two is actually holds bait more because the posts are closer together. It's only about 5 feet by 5 feet. Marker two is about 5 foot by 5 foot. The pilings kind of get tied together at the top. They lean in. Whereas you have marker one out off of Ponce de Leon Park, those are four poster marker and maybe more, but they're very spread out. It's a very big marker.
Yeah, it's
so,
almost like a platform more
exactly.
than it is.
Exactly. The problem with it is, with the four posts that are very close together, it creates a better habitat for them.
Right.
Now, what I really enjoy is when somebody comes up to the marker, they anchor on the high side of the tide so that the back of the boat is trailing at the marker. Then they start taking handfuls of chum. They mix it with either water or menhaden oil or a combination of, and get it into big balls, fist size, and they're tossing it down by the marker, and they're waiting for all this bait to boil up there, and it will. It will come up to them on the upcurrent side of the marker, and they'll throw their cast net on it. Now, what's good for you is knowing that they're doing this, and all those handfuls of chum get kind of swept right through the marker if you've got even a relatively good flowing tide at all. So what you want to do is go about 30 feet down current of the marker and watch in the water. And when you see that little flash, throw your net there. Because for every one that he chummed to him, there's 300 to 400 that are over there enjoying that free chum about 30 feet down current of the marker. Throw your net once or twice, all done. Never go up by the guy with the chum. Let him do the work for you. You know, everybody always goes, oh, he's chumming right there. I want to go right up next to him. And then everybody gets mad, and it doesn't do you any good. So, go down about 30 feet, watch in the water. Oh, there's a flash. Throw your net, load the boat up, one and done. You're out catching bait.
Do you need to load the boat up, though?
No. You need to think of bait fish, what, is like a snook or a redfish.
Right.
Each individual bait fish should be treated with the care that you would take on a trout, a snook, a redfish, a flounder.
Right.
Because every two bait fish that you take are 500 that's not there the next year.
Right.
If bait's so hard to find and you're out there wondering, well, how come I can't find bait? Well, because we've cast netted them all. The guys, the captains always say, well, the bait moved. Yeah, it moved. It moved into their live well and then went out fishing somewhere. That's where it moved to. It didn't, like, move a half a mile down the shoreline. It literally was wiped out.
Yeah.
So
it's just like telling somebody about your favorite crappie spot. Only takes one extra guy to go in there and take the whole school. There's only so many to a school before you can take them out. They didn't move. They just got decimated.
Yep, they moved into your cooler or into your live well or whatever.
So, you know, really what you need to do is just take what you think you're going to use that day, and rather than crushing your bait fish to chum with, just throw them out there healthy. They're going to swim around and still get wrecked by other fish.
Well, you put them in a net, you put them in a ball bat. Now, we have, actually it was a guy in Port Charlotte who patented the chum slinger, which is a very wide wiffle ball bat with an angle cut on it, a little stopper in the bottom by the handle. And you would take half a dozen of the bait fish, put them in there. Now, years ago, the guys would kind of squeeze them, get the air out of them, maybe wound them a bit, so they'd swim around in circles. And they actually were better bait. But you're killing so many bait fish by doing that, none survive. If you just take them out of your live well, put them in the bat so you can sling them out there. And if you're going to try and throw them by hand, do it underhand. Trust me, you'll whip your shoulder out trying to sling a bait overhand.
Right.
But if you do it underhanded, put a little whip on your wrist, you can actually throw them in pretty good ways. Think how fast those girls throw a softball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're like blowing the guys away underhanded, and it's like, boom. You know, that's the way you throw a whitebait is underhand. But usually we put them in the bat, the chum slinger bats. And all I do is I put them in there, and by putting them in the bat and then throwing them through the air, you pretty much discombobulated them anyway.
Yeah, they've already got a little bit of brain damage and disoriented anyhow, so they're going to get eaten, you know. And then the other thing is, at the end of the day, if you've got extras left over, stop on the grass flats and let them go rather than dumping them out at the boat ramp or in your canal.
You want to dump them where they have a chance of surviving it.
Surviving, absolutely.
Now, I do recommend, even though this goes against what we're saying, is keep 6 to 12 in the live well and let them go when you get back before you load the boat, because there's always that fish right there that makes you nuts. And as soon as you empty your live well out entirely, I mean, the biggest, best fish in the world will appear, and you got nothing to hit them with.
No, I'll agree with that. But, and, you know, and we're saying this because we've done this, and not saying that we're reformed or anything, but we're realizing that there are some small issues. And it's
big
time,
issues.
It's time to pay attention to that, because a lot of people for years thought it was a never-ending amount of bait fish, that it was always going to be here. And we've just seen different situations where it's just too much is too much, so we gotta.
Well, you would watch people pull the boat up onto the ramp and dump them all out on the concrete.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's really bad behavior.
Yes.
But another way to go find these guys, Now, we sell two types of bait. We sell the stuff in the bag, dry powder, and then we sell another one, the Boca Coast Chum. Now, if it's me, I'm going to get a bag of each. Now, I start off with the powder stuff that's in the Ziploc bags that we have. And I put it out on the water dry. Now, I'm going to go back to the flats, like, say, just north of Pirate Harbor, about an eighth of a mile, or out in front of Pirate Harbor. Or on the flats out on Boquilla, Jug Creek Shoals. When you go in through the channel markers to get behind the sandbars on the north end of Pine Island, what they call Boquilla, go off to your right or left a little bit, getting about 3 feet of water. Now, just put your anchor in, and now you go up, and I start just with little tiny pinch of that dry powder, and I want it to hit the water, and I want it to spread across the surface. Little tiny flakes, as it goes along, are going to go down into the water, and you don't need to wet it. In fact, it's to your disadvantage to wet it at this point. And it's the reason I don't use the Boca Coast Chum at this point. I want the dry powder. I want to put a little bit down, wait for it to drift away from the boat, sprinkle some more on the water, and I'm literally talking something, you know, an amount about the size of a dime around a marble, and just spread it out and let it lightly drift away from the boat. And that's what takes patience, is to be able to just sprinkle that little bit and then watch it drift away a little bit, sprinkle a little bit more, let it drift away. Now, once it starts drifting away, all of a sudden you're going to see little fish come to the surface to hit it. They're going to start with the stuff drifting down, then they're going to come up and start hitting the stuff on the top. Now you know where they're at. So now I'm going to take a little bit of that powder chum, put it in a small container, mix it with a little bit of water or menhaden oil. Usually I just use water. And I make little balls about the size of a quarter, and I throw them over by the bait fish. And it hits the water, drops in, and the baits get up to that. And then I'm going to go about 5-6 feet closer to me with my next ball the size of a quarter. And that's mixing in the water. The baits, oh, there's more. Okay, we're going to go after that. And then about another 5-6 feet closer. And then a little bit closer. Now, once they're up closer to the boat, I put a little bit of water with the Boca Coast Chum. And I start throwing that right next to the boat. Now, what the Boca Coast Chum does is you throw it out, it goes to the bottom. As it starts to activate, it bubbles back to the surface. So it creates a kind of a chum rising cloud there, but it'll hold the bait better. So once I get them up close to the boat, I'm using that Boca Coast Chum to get them closer and closer to the boat. And once they're up next to the boat, I'll throw a fairly good size amount out there, maybe a handful, kind of packed in, toss it down. Now I can go throw my net, get the bait in, throw another handful of chum, throw my net, and just keep working that way. Where the other chum, the regular dry stuff, it won't hold them there. You have to have one person continuously chumming, and I'm talking about something about the size of a large jawbreaker piece at a time. Tossing it out there, making another ball, toss it out there. And if you stop that for even 2 minutes, they're all going to move off and you start the whole thing over again.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. But the other thing you can do is, or what the Boca Chum does is it creates in the entire water column, and it'll bring them up off the bottom, suspend them in the water column, and bring them up to the top also. So you're covering bait fish throughout the entire water column rather than just it floating on the surface. Can only bring them to the surface, and they can sometimes dive down under your net a little bit.
No, it's the best. The Boca Coast is the best for holding them by the boat.
Yes, it keeps them 100% there much longer without having, because you can do it one person, basically. Like you said, two people is better with the other way.
If you got the regular dry chum, you got to have one person chumming, one person cast netting.
Right.
But with that Boca Coast, you can do it yourself. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Any questions you can think of on bait or bait fish that way? Sabikis. Robert, how do you use a sabiki? What's a sabiki? Sabaki? Sabuko? Sabiki? Beaky rigs?
Yeah.
Binkies. I could use a binky right about now. Okay. Tell me about sabikis. What does that have to do with bait? What are
well,
they?
Well, for catching whitebait or...
thread fins.
Yeah, for thread fins it's going to work fine, but for the smaller scaled sardines that everyone's trying to catch as a whitebait, it's not really going to work. Sabiki rigs are going to be something that you're going to use in... for the bigger thread fins, like what we use for tarpon fishing or going offshore for grouper, snapper,
actually,
king mackerel.
Some pretty small ones with it, Robert.
Yeah, it's just not a consistent thing that you can do all the time.
Okay, I do it pretty well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll take that Pepsi challenge with
Billy,
you.
Billy Hoffman
yeah?
was the one who was really showing me how to do that.
Really?
Yeah, Billy Hoffman was great at that. And we would sabiki, and we're talking 3-inch to 4-inch white bait with no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, yeah, and Billy Hoffman was great at that. Uses a side sweep to the rod. You know, I always run the rod up and down,
right.
Get more of a hop out of it. For those smaller bait fish, he's just sweeping it to the side. And we did real good with it, and I've been doing that trick ever since.
See, I've never had any success at catching them on a sabiki.
Okay, but a sabiki rig is a grouping of hooks, very small, number 6, 8s, 10s, 12s, little tiny hooks, with kind of a feather-ish coating on them, maybe
yeah.
some fish skin or...
feather, mylar, something just a little bit flashy.
Like mini flies.
Yeah.
Or mini jigs.
Yeah.
But they're all attached to the same line. So you've got 5 to 8 hooks. All on the same line, you tie one end to your fishing line, and the other end you put a weight on it all the way at the bottom. Usually a bass casting sinker, little drop-shaped ones with the brass ring on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it out, and you start jigging it back to you.
Right. And usually you're going to do it around where, like, thread fins don't come to chum as easily, is what I found. You know, every now and then I've gotten them to come to chum, but for the most part, you're actually looking for them either dimple in the surface area, or you'll really find them around channel markers, especially like outside of Boca Grande Pass. And what you do is just pitch it into it and just slowly start reeling and jigging, and as soon as you feel one on it, hesitate for a couple seconds, even shake the rod a little bit, and that'll usually get into that... one panicked fish almost acts like a feeding frenzy, and the other ones will start going in there too. So next thing you know, you got 3, 4, 5, 6 at a time going on, and you just reel them up. But the other cool part is blue runners, squirrel fish, pinfish, they all hit that very readily too, so you never know what's going to grab
them. Oh, and the dang Spanish mackerel just.
No,
oh,
Spanish
my God.
Mackerel, then, really.
Okay, that's the sabiki rigs ruined.
Yeah.
But this is a little school chain of small jigs slash flies, all on the same line. Cast it out when you see the bait. If you go out through Boca Grande Pass, watch for those markers there. Figure out what side the tide's coming from. And you can actually just cast them around those markers and do very well catching your own bait fish. It doesn't have to go all the way to the bottom. But if you're not seeing bait, remember to let it sink more.
Right.
And just kind of jig it back to you, slowly retrieving, giving it a nice jig, and you'll catch a lot of different bait fish. And they're great on grouper, king mackerel, all the different fish out there. They love eating those bait fish, those little bright, shiny bait fish.
And there's a lot of different brands and models of sabiki rigs out there. Some have a green glow bead on them. Some have a red bead on them.
And the one I like the best is... usually, if I'm going to use one as a green or a red glow bead, I pick the one that sells for around $1, $1.30. If I really am having a hard time catching bait and I really need to, I spend the extra money and get the R&H. He's got one that has green and red on it, on the same one. So that one's worth, it's the only one I can see spending more than $1 or so, you know, $1.30 on it. I think the cheapest ones I got right now are, what, $1.34 or something like that. But those are the ones I usually use, but everybody's got their favorite. That's why we literally have, like, 40 or 50 different kinds.
Right. Yeah, and see, for me, I don't necessarily go by the price. I'll just get several different ones because there's times where that bait really does get that picky and finicky. And I don't want to sit there and mess around with it all day long, so I at least want to know that I have options with a couple different colors, whether it's the fly is a different color, or the bead's a different color, It's frustrating at times.
Now, in Charlotte Harbor, if you're going to try sea kinging, looking for bait between Mangrove Point, or what we call a whorehouse, Mangrove Point, down just where, if you come south from Ponce de Leon Park, right where the Punta Gorda means wide point, and that wide point there, the south end of that is Mangrove Point. And if you draw a line between there and the artificial reef, somewhere in there, there's usually a good schools of bait fish to sabiki up. Now, you might not see them. You've got to look pretty close in the water, so you're just idling along until you see flashing in the water. If you're going out through the middle of the harbor, nice calm day, over the deep holes, quite often there's bait fish there, down around marker 5. Marker 2 is holding bait right now, right at the mouth of the Peace River. It's a red marker, 4 posts, says number 2 on it. And up by marker 1, I haven't had any bait reports, but I'm pretty sure they would be there. But when I'm looking for bait, I'll stop at the well-known ones, like 2 or 1. But then I'm looking at marker 3, marker 8. You know, I'm looking at all the single post markers, because I can just throw right behind there. I don't have to see anything. I don't chum. I just do a blind cast, let the lead weights just barely touch the marker, go right down to the bottom, and then lift up, and they're either there or they're not. But quite often I get my bait that way and not have to be around where all the other boats are.
Right, exactly.
Let's see, bait fish. Spanish mackerel, mm-hmm. Where are they?
The Spanish mackerel there's been a few around the 41 bridge and out through the 20-foot holes. But they're so scattered that it's not really targetable. It's just kind of an accidental bycatch. But from Marker 5 out through Boca Grande Pass, they've been pretty heavy through there. And then up and down the beaches from a mile out to about 10 miles out, if you can get out there because of the wind. But over the next several days, it's supposed to get really gorgeous this weekend, according to the weatherman.
All right, so, what's your favorite lure, or what's your favorite way to catch Spanish mackerel?
Honestly, usually looking for them blowing up on schools of bait or free jumping, and then going out there and casting a gotcha into that area and reeling as fast as I can.
Gotcha's the first lure I ever sold you, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a...
Apparently it's stuck, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they work. I mean, that's
how I met Robert, selling on the gotcha plug years ago.
They're a little tiny steel tube painted in different colors, but most of the ones are chrome with like a colored head, you know, whether it's yellow or orange or whatever. And then they got 2 treble hooks on them. Some of them even have single hooks, but they come in various lengths, sizes, and colors. But I like just a plain old chrome one is fine with me. And you just cast it and reel as fast as you can, and it works. You know, my second best bet is just a plain old chrome spoon and reel as fast as I can once again. You know, that's my way of doing the Spanish mackerel fishing.
You brought the gotchas in here probably a year ago when I saw it. I said, those look like the old striper lures we used to use. And I bought one from you right here at the radio station.
Yep.
I pulled a fiver out of the pocket so I could have one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those gotchas are great lures.
I've got people catching weird stuff on them.
What's that?
I get people that buy them because they catch all sorts of weird stuff on them. Snook, redfish, mangrove snapper, cobia. I mean, I got one guy that buys them to use them off the beach during the summertime for snook fishing. That's like one of his favorite lures to throw.
And I believe that because it's heavy, but you got to be able to have a little bit of water, or you got to reel quickly because it's just throwing a piece of metal.
Yeah,
there's no buoyancy to it at all.
It sinks like a rock.
But it was originally the head and jerk jigger, and it's from the 1960s and invented for walleye fishing, jerk jigging straight up and down. It went over to the East Coast. The guys did the stripers, all the stuff off the coast there. Made its way down to Florida, where it became the mackerel lure of choice all through the 90s and into the early, mid-2000s. Yes. Until the silly jig came out and started taking over a bit of its fun, because they used to use the smaller ones on pompano and the bigger ones on mackerel. But now that silly jig's kind of taken over as the kind of all-arounder, where it used to be the gotcha plug.
Yeah, no, I agree with that wholeheartedly. that's the only drawback, like, when you are pompano fishing, is I tell people to only bounce the rod tip 6 to 8 inches. If they keep that thing going through the water column, it's going to get bit off by a Spanish mackerel every time.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And the trolling forum is probably one of the best ways to at least locate them, because a lot of times, even if you don't see the bait, if you troll along with a spoon or even one of those gotchas, just troll slow and you come across a Spanish mackerel once you hook one.
Right, now, I'm going to say go ahead and troll a gotcha on any rod and reel.
Right.
Whether you got mono, braided, or whatever. But if you're trolling a spoon, if you have braided line, don't troll a spoon. Did we talk about this the other
day? We did, and we talked about swivels. And certain types of swivels are a waste of time. They're just a knot in the line.
Yeah,
you need the ball bearing stainless steel swivel.
You need the ball bearing swivels, and they're actually brass, but ball bearing. They have stainless ball bearings, but they got brass bodies. But the thing with the ball bearings is if you're trolling a spoon, make sure you got monofilament on the line. Everybody wants to go out trolling for a Spanish mackerel right now. That can get to be very expensive when you have to replace your braided line every trip because it's all twisted and tangled up. So put a rod out, old rod, put monofilament on, troll your spoons on monofilament. You can just cut it off, drag it behind the boat, reel in new line.
Well, even with the ball-bearing swivel, it's twisting up the braided line?
Oh, 100%. It'll only take out 80 or 90% of the spin.
Okay.
And that still leaves you 10, 20%. And after a few hours worth of trolling, it's like a million turns.
Right.
Yeah, but braided line remembers every twist and turn that you put in it. It just doesn't give it back.
I can't get it straightened out. Can mono easy. That's why I troll a spoon with mono.
Yeah. That's definitely good advice. Don't troll spoons with braided line.
Now, what do you prefer for a leader for Spanish mackerel, mono or steel?
Well, dealer's choice there, Mr. Robert. Now, after the last 2, 3 years of us hanging out together, what would you guess my options would be?
Mono.
Really?
Guessing.
No, I'd definitely steal.
Well, after our experience with getting broke off on everything imaginable that one time with steel, mono, swivel, no swivel.
So what you're saying is I have no preference, I lose fish on everything?
No, we were losing fish on everything.
Frank, you could catch a fish in a bucket with both hands.
No, nope. We were both losing fish and couldn't figure it out until we watched them do it because the water was so clear that day. And that just boggled my mind.
What were we watching? The suspense is killing me. Oh, my God, I'm the one who, if I get in the room and remember why I'm there, it's a great day.
We were catching.
I've eaten since then. I just stopped at Wendy's. You know, I can't remember past that.
We were catching Spanish mackerel just outside of Gasparilla Pass, and it was springtime like right now, and the water was very, very clear. And we kept getting bit off, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. So we switched over to tying the steel directly to the mono line, figured maybe they were biting the swivel. And turns out, once we got them up close to the boat, we were watching the other ones biting that off, too, because they were biting the line-to-line knot on the steel, biting the line-to-line knot on mono versus mono. I mean, it was...
Come on, we'll go on. Mono and mono.
Exactly.
Okay. What it is we've had them hit the line where it's at the surface of the water, where your line, you have a fish on, he's running sideways, and it creates a little V on the top, and we've watched fish come up and eat that. They're going to hit anything. So basically what we ended up doing was going to black steel leaders and black swivels, black leader material, anything that's not shiny, anything that you can think of to try and reduce it.
Yeah, there's just going to be times where you get into them that heavy and they're in that much of a feeding frenzy, no matter what you do, you're still going to end up probably losing fish.
All right. Are there any snook in the area right now?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all over the place, really. I mean,
there's
a lot of fish moving out of the rivers, out of the Myakka River.
I thought the red tide killed all the snook.
They killed every one of them. Yes. So the rest of them are just unicorns that were imagining things.
Yes.
The Peace River and the Myakka River are seeing a lot of fish on them, but they're moving down. The east wall and the west wall, you're seeing small groups of fish of a little bit larger size fish, like I'm going to say, like in the mid-20s to even in the low 30s, But there's a lot of little guys in that 18 to 26 inch range all over the place in little groups and, well, schools, I guess would be the appropriate word. But Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, they're starting to move out of those way back creeks and underneath the mangroves. I mean, they are truly in that springtime getting ready to go into a spawning period because guys are seeing little schools of fish here. And then coming back an hour later, and there's not a single fish to be seen again. And then coming back a couple hours later, and then seeing another little cluster of fish again. So these fish are starting to move around. It wouldn't surprise me if there's already some fish in the passes. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's even a couple stragglers starting to hit the beach, looking around, anticipating, you know, little scouts going out there to check things out. Because that water temperature.
Somebody's always at the bar at 7 o'clock at night. Bands don't start till 9. There's always somebody in there at 7 trying to get ahead on the action.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty impressive.
Speaking of which, you're going to be doing, what night are you performing here, RJ?
It's a Saturday night, June 22nd. Benefit performance for the radio station.
Saturday?
It's a Saturday night, yep.
Saturday, June 22nd, right here, at the Common Grounds, RJ, the commander, the controller. It will be performing. So get your tickets, call the station here at WKDW, get your tickets, and come down and see RJ. He's actually better than he looks, folks. It's pretty good.
And I promised some fishing jokes in the night also.
All right, that might have been a deal breaker for most of you, but I'm going to say, go ahead, come anyway, in spite of the fishing jokes, you're going to enjoy the performance. Even though he's going to be telling fishing jokes, I think it's still going to be worth your money. You're going to enjoy the performance. All right, June 22nd, make your reservations, come down and see RJ here at the Big WKDW. Robert, are there any tarpon in the harbor?
Yeah, the tarpon.
Are they as entertaining as RJ when he does his performances?
For me personally, I find tarpon more entertaining, but
I'll remember that.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, geez.
Honest answer.
Brutal.
I guess it depends on the Jameson involved.
That's right.
You know, and that might change things up a little bit.
So I jump pretty high if you stick a hook in my mouth. Well, so
yeah, I bet. You know, I never thought about it that way.
Right? That would be entertaining.
Yeah.
But no, the pass has had tarpon in it literally for a month now. But there's
I had this horrible vision. I'm sorry. I'm picturing RJ with a hook in his mouth, hopping around in his tidy whities, you know, going there white belly to the sun, just killing me.
Poke my mind's eye out.
Yeah, there you go.
God, I was sitting there. I couldn't. I'm like, oh God, this is in my head now. Oh God.
Psychiatric
and you did it to yourself.
Jeez. Self-inflicted there.
It hurts. Help.
You need a nap. I think you're starting to go delusional today.
So back to tarpon.
Yeah. Tell me about
refocus,
tarpon.
Refocus, boys. Refocus.
Oh!
Boca Grande has had them in there for the last month off and on pretty consistently. And then it's Sanibel off of Knapp's Point.
See what happens when I'm sleeping
before
the show.
Right. Sanibel off of Knapp's Point has had tarpon out there, too, pretty consistently for the last month. But now we're starting to see more fish slowly trickling into the ICW, and some of our resident fish are trickling out of the rivers and the canals, so we're seeing little groupings of fish in the 20-foot holes on the outside of the bar on the east and west wall. Still some fish moving around on the river of all sizes, from little guys to big guys. A lot of the little guys are being more active on the river, so you're not seeing the big ones, but there's been some good-sized fish moving around. The hardest part is that it's at the beginning of the season. It's even a month early. So there is no right pattern right now to try to find those fish. You've just got to start at point A and work your through area through B, C, D, E, and F and hope you find them at one of those normal locations where they're normally hanging out. You know, because they are moving around a lot. They're looking for that food. They're looking for that water temperature.
And we're putting the tarpon maps up on fishandfranks.com. They're at the bottom of the fishing report down there. There's tarpon maps every week from where we hear, color-coded dots to tell you where the best likelihood of catching fish are.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just got to go around and start looking for them, and they're hitting a variety of baits, which is cool. You know, they're hitting the bait busters, the storm swim baits as far as artificials go, but there's a few of them that have been being caught on ladyfish, a few pinfish, a few crabs, and shrimp is probably, like, if you're out on the beach or in the passes right now, shrimp's your number one choice for
tarpon. How you rig that shrimp up for the tarpon?
Me personally, I'm going to use a split shot or a pinch-on weight and try to almost vertical fish it, just doing a controlled drift out there in the pass. You know, depending on how strong the current is. I mean, a lot of the guys at night are using the typical tarpon rig slash grouper rig with a sliding egg sinker and a long leader. But
now, when I go out to do them out there, I actually go in one side of the head and out the other right below the horn. I'm using a very oversized hook, say a 5-aught, 6-aught, getting right. as big a shrimp as I can find. But now what I want to do is I put them in a bubbler in a white bucket. I don't want the lid on there. I got to change the water lock because if it gets hot, the shrimp are going to die. But I want them in clear water, white bucket. I want them as translucent as possible. That's a big key to getting those fish to hit them, is getting them to reduce the color so they're clear. And once I put the hook in, I do as you say, Robert, with the pinch-on weight, the bigger pinch-on weight.
Yeah.
But I go up into the current until I see where the tarpon are. As soon as I get into the current, I turn the boat so the back of the boat is up against the current, so the nose is trailing with the current. Then I'm in reverse just a little bit, trying to kind of hold my position, and I throw that shrimp up into the tide, letting it drift back down past the boat. With the boat in reverse, I'm holding it so that the shrimp will go faster than the boat. So I cast it out there as far as I can up into the current. I pull 3 to 10 pulls out the end of the rod before I close the bail. Give me a little extra line, a little more depth. That pinch on weight's dragging that shrimp down towards the bottom. The current's moving it forward. It's making a big arc. I wait until it comes up, until that line is coming back towards the surface before I reel it in. It's really painstaking. But without the boat in reverse, being stopped, casting up into the current, if you cast down with the current, it's just the line is going to bring that bait right back to the top. You got to give it time to drift down and hit the fish.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good advice. You know, because that fishing with shrimp out there in any of the passes, because that current's moving from 2 to 5 knots, I mean, it's cranking. So you definitely got to give it enough, you got to feed out enough line to get it to go down there. And most of the time I'm using a 3/8 ounce or even up to a half, I'm sorry, a 3/4 ounce up to a 1 ounce pinch on weight, you know, because it does require a little bit of weight to get that to sink down fast enough, because you're using a shrimp that's anywhere from a 3.5 inches long all the way up to 5.5 inches long, you know, pretty chunky size. But it doesn't always have to be giant shrimp, so if you can't get really big shrimp, go with the largest you can, and you'll be amazed with how readily they'll eat a shrimp. So many people over the years have kind of laughed at us, but just these last 2 years, it's kind of really caught on.
All right. Now, if you're going to go out and want to try for a little bit of redfish, what are the redfish eating right now?
They're eating some cut ladyfish. Some cut sardines are working real well. They are starting to switch over a little bit to crabs, but for the most part, the handful that are being caught with any size are being caught on cut bait.
All right, so what bait are we cutting?
The ladyfish or the sardines is what I would cut up. The big frozen sardines and
ladyfish. So the Spanish sardines, ladyfish, those are kind of your best bet right now on the redfish.
A couple guys are catching them on crabs, but the main ones I've been hearing about in that upper 20s to low 30s size, all been uncut ladyfish.
Now, if I had the fish in my head. What's weird is we're starting to hear more trout stories.
A few more trout stories. I mean, we're hearing stuff all over the place. The Pine Island Sound has had some bigger trout. Lemon Bay still got some bigger trout. Some guys are catching them in 2 feet of water. Some guys are catching them out in 8 feet of water.
And Bull and Turtle Bay down drifting through the middle. Hearing great stories about there. If you want numbers of trout, a tandem rig. is a really good thing. The DOA Deadly Tandem. T-A-N-D-U-M, Tandem. I think that's how you spell it. I don't know. But it means two at once. And you're casting them out, jigging them up. You're going to get a lot of numbers with that. Or you can use a DOA Deadly Combo, which has a popping cork and the DOA Shrimp below it. Pop the cork every once in a while for sheer numbers. Those are going to be your best number bets. They're both DOA because it originally started the tandem as a Lovelord, two jigs being pulled at the same time.
Right.
But they're out of business, the best on the market right now. And I don't know if I would say it's better than the original Lovelords, but it's definitely as good as. And that's the DOA one. And then they do sell that pre-rigged popping cork shrimp that just works awesome.
Absolutely.
But if I'm going for bigger trout, I'm going old school. I'm going to a TT18 mirror lure or maybe a TT11. Now, what that is the old school mirror lure, little bigger, falls about 2 feet per second in salt water. So when you see the splash and you're in 3 feet of water, watch the splash, 1001, and start twitching it back to you. Use the rod to your side with a tiny bit up, twitch, twitch, stop, twitch, stop, twitch, twitch, stop. Don't go fast. Slow, twitch, twitch, stop, slow, twitch. That bigger bait, because it's a bigger bait, it's not like an MR17, it's a little bit bigger, and it's going to get those bigger trout. The bigger ones are not as active as the smaller ones. I'm still fairly active, but I ain't nowhere close to what I was at 18.
Well, they also like fish for food more than the shrimp.
Okay. Well, anyway, on that note, get down deep, go slow for those big trout. They are here, but can't keep them right now anyway. But we're going to be back next week with all kinds of cool stuff. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and Commander and Controller RJ in the booth. See you guys on the next one. Thanks for listening.
Fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.